What I will say is I will remove the municipalities.
I'm going to call this meeting of the Elections, Finance, and Government Operations Committee to order. Today is March 4th, 2026. We do have a quorum present. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from Monday, March 2nd. Is there anybody who would like to move approval of the minutes?
Go move, Mr. Chair.
I move the minutes.
I think I might have heard, was that, I think I heard Representative McDonald first, so I will accept
But let's have it, a culture of being recognized by the chair.
Okay, so Representative McDonald, Chair McDonald, has moved approval of the minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, the minutes are adopted. The first bill, so we have four bills that are agency bills that were brought forward by the Met Council. There's a few different authors all on this committee. We will hear the Met Council bills first. We will lay them, the plan is to lay them over. So the first one on the agenda is House File 3884. Vice Chair Lee, if you'd care to go up to the testifying table. And I will move that House File 3884 be laid over for possible inclusion. And I'll just kind of fill the time here with some meaningless talking while we wait for Vice Chair Lee to get to the table and get her materials in order.
Okay.
Everybody looks great today, so thank you for wearing your best clothes today to the committee, everybody. Thank you. And it looks like Vice Chair Lee is ready. So would you like to discuss your bill?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair. So very simply, House File 3884 would allow the Met Council to directly award grants to tribal governments and tribal development entities for two of their grant programs, the Livable Communities Act grants and Community Tree Planting grants. So for those not familiar, Livable Communities have been in place for 30 years, or this program has been in place for 30 years. Hopefully all our communities are livable. With the Met Council directed by statute to administer this program. The Livable Communities Program is a competitive grant program that operates in the 7-county metro area, which is the jurisdiction of Met Council. It supports projects across the development continuum, including setting the stage for development through policy and small area planning, cleaning up of polluted sites. You guys might know these as brownfields, and a variety of development projects across communities in the region with an emphasis on affordable housing. Currently, the Met Council is only able to provide grants to tribal governments or tribal development entities if they are a subrecipient of a local unit of government. And so typically they would apply together with a city, and this bill would actually help streamline the process and allow tribes to instead directly apply for grants and receive the grant funds. So that's one portion of the bill. The other portion of the bill affects the Community Tree Planting Grant Program. And this is pretty similar to the Department of Natural Resources Community Tree Planting Grant Program that you may have heard of if you're in the Environment Committee. But the difference is that the DNR statute actually allows for tribal governments to directly apply for grants versus the statute that governs Met Council's program does not. And so the second portion of this bill, House File 3884, includes language to give Met Council the same authority that the DNR already has. And because this is a new program to me, with us virtually today to talk more about the bill and the program is Lisa Barajas, the Executive Director of Community Development at the Metropolitan Council. Is she here?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Can you hear me? Thank you. Yes. Welcome to the committee. Sorry, I forgot we had a remote testifier. So welcome to the committee, and we can hear you. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Lisa Beth Barajas. I'm the Executive Director of Community Development at the Metropolitan Council. Thank you for having me today. And thank you for the opportunity to present remotely as I'm getting over a cold and do not want to expose you to that. Just a little more detail to what Representative Lee provided. In sections 1 through 4 of the proposed bill language, Those all relate to the Livable Communities Act provisions. There's a number of different provisions related to the funds within the program where we want to insert or are proposing to insert tribal governments as a development authority that would be eligible to apply. This would treat tribal governments and development entities similarly to how port authorities and other housing and redevelopment authorities and community development agencies in the metro are treated, where they can apply directly to the Livable Communities Act program as long as their project is within a participating city within the metro area. So just mirroring that language and adding tribal governments to those definitions in those four different sections that you'll see in the bill. And then in section five, community tree planting grants, while this is a new program for us, we also would like to add tribal governments and mirror the Department of Natural Resources program language and eligible entities. We work very closely with the Department of Natural Resources in implementing our respective programs since local governments across the state are eligible for the statewide program that the DNR operates that includes cities within the metro. And cities within the metro are eligible for obviously the metro area one as well. So we try to make our programs as aligned as we can, given that they were authorized by the legislature at the same time and constructed similarly. The only difference being that tribal governments aren't included in the metro area provision. So we'd like to include them there as well. We do have tribal governments that operate within the metro area as well as hold land in the metro area. This legislation would really help streamline that granting opportunity for tribal governments within the seven county metro for both of our programs and simplify the process. We've had applicants or applications in our LCA program, our Livable Communities program, sorry, I'll try to refrain from acronyms, in the past and have awarded projects to tribal governments as a part of our Livable Communities program. This would just simplify the process for them. Our community tree planting program is relatively new. We've just done one round of funding so far. Haven't received an application as of yet, but wanted to, again, like I said before, mirror that opportunity in our metro program as against the one that available in the statewide DNR program. So with that, I'm happy to stand for any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this bill? All right, seeing none, any member discussions about the bill? Okay, seems pretty straightforward. Vice Chair Lee, any closing remarks?
No, we'll just lay the bill over.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right, thank you for presenting the bill. House File 3884 is laid over. The next bill on the agenda is House File 3881. I will move that House File 3881 be recommended to be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you for presenting the bill, Representative Vernig. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg, Chair Quam, and members of the committee. Before you is House File 3881, a bill brought forth by the Metropolitan Council. This bill would align statutory tools for the Metropolitan Council to procure goods and services from small businesses with small business procurement authority already provided to the state of Minnesota, to state agencies, excuse me. The bill does two main things. It grants the Met Council authority consistent with the Minnesota state agencies related to procurement for small businesses, targeted small businesses, and veteran-owned small businesses. It also requires an annual report to the legislature concerning contract awards during the preceding year. It would also repeal Section 473.144, resolving inconsistencies in current Minnesota statutes with regard to workforce requirements for Met Council vendors. I do have testifiers here today to talk more about the bill.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Freiberg and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to discuss House File 3881 today. My name is Ashanti Payne. I am the Director of the Office of Civil Rights and Small Business Programs at the Metropolitan Council. I also want to thank Representative Vernon for authoring this proposal. Currently in statute, the Metropolitan Council has the same authorities as the state to work with targeted small businesses and veteran-owned small businesses. This bill would allow the Met Council to have the same authorities as state agencies already have to contract with small businesses more broadly. Section 1 of the bill adds small businesses to the statute that governs the Met Council's contracting authorities. When we proposed this language, the revisor's office also took this opportunity to add headings and subdivisions to the existing statute, so you will see those conforming changes in the bill as well. Section 1 of the bill would also require a report from the Met Council to the legislature about how we will work with small businesses. We do regular reporting to the Metropolitan Council, our governing board, and we are proposing to also report directly to the legislature to ensure there's transparency about how we work with small businesses. Section 2 of the bill repeals a section of law that applies to metropolitan agencies, such as the Met Council, and deals with certificates of compliance. Another section of law already governs certificates of compliance for state agencies and metropolitan agencies. So having two separate laws for metropolitan agencies has generated some confusion, especially since the laws are very similar, but not identical. For example, one of the versions of this law requires any business having more than 40 full-time employees to receive a certificate of compliance, whereas the other version of the law requires businesses having 40 or more full-time employees to receive that certificate. If the Metropolitan Agency-specific statute is repealed, the Met Council would still be subject to the remaining statute that applies to state agencies and metropolitan agencies. With that, I am happy to stand for any questions, and I also have colleagues with me from our procurement department here with who are also available for questions as well.
Okay. Thank you. I do have Robert Carey on the agenda. Is he just available for questions or did he want to speak?
He is available for questions.
Okay, great. Thank you. Is there any member of the public who'd like to speak on this bill? Okay, seeing none, any member discussion? All right, Representative Vernig, would you like to provide any closing remarks?
No, thank you. I'd just like to renew my motion that House File 3881 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. With that, House File 3881 is laid over. So thank you. Appreciate your testimony. And then we have another Representative Vernig bill, House File 3882. Representative Vernig, would you like to move that House File 3882 be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. So the bill is before us. Please describe your bill, Representative Vernig.
Sure. Before you is another House File 3882, a Metropolitan Council bill. This bill would make administrative changes to streamline processes that will improve program administration and simplify processes for local government partners. This bill does a variety of things. It eliminates the Met Council's role to review municipal housing bonds programs, which they have no role in approving. It clarifies inconsistent and obsolete statutory references, such as orderly and economic and orderly and economical, and or removing old dates that are no longer relevant. It also streamlines metropolitan significance review and reporting, streamlines Livable Communities Act programs, such as clarifying what should be in the report and when it should be submitted, clarifying auditing processes for parks operations and maintenance funding, and removing conflicting language about agricultural preserves programs. I also have Lisa Beth here to testify on this.
Welcome back to the committee. Please re-identify yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lisa Barajas, Executive Director of the Community Development Division at the Metropolitan Council. Thank you to Representative Vernig for authoring this bill. This bill does a lot of items, but really are meant to streamline the administrative processes for each of these areas in the Metropolitan Council staff's experience in operating these different provisions. We've come across issues where clarity can be provided through these changes and help make the statutory language clearer about next steps and provisions. Section 1, as noted, eliminates the council's review role in housing programs. This is an old statute that was developed prior to the Metropolitan Land Planning Act, where the council has review authority over local comprehensive plans, which we did not at the time that the housing program review was written originally. That said, we're much more upstream, and whereas the housing program review is on the funding side of projects that we're already seeing in comprehensive plans. So we don't have much to say about these once they come across our desk and can streamline that process for locals as they're moving to move their programs forward to support affordable housing development locally. So removing a step of the process for them. Sections 2, 3, and 11 through 14 clarify requirements and language, as the representative noted, around orderly and economical, some reviser standard language changes as well, and then some long since passed deadlines and dates, and statutes that are no longer relevant given other updates to the statute. Section 4 relates to metropolitan significance rules and changes the time horizon by which the council must review those rules. Currently, it's every 2 years, and what we are proposing is changing that to every 10 years. Metropolitan significance rules are important. They're not frequently invoked, but it is a review authority that the council is granted by the legislature to review projects proposed in the metro area that may be deemed of metropolitan significance or have an impact that might otherwise fall outside of a comprehensive plan. Those rules are codified in Minnesota Rules Chapter 5800. And reviewing them every other year seems rather onerous for rules that are not used that often. And this would just change that timeline to an every 10-year process. That doesn't mean that the council couldn't review them more often, but certainly just limits the requirement to do them as frequently as it notes. Section 5 relates to annual reporting to the legislature, adds some summary about changes and reviews from local governments, and really clarifies the volume of reporting that we actually are already providing today, but doesn't quite line up with the language that's in statute that we'd like to be able to be clearer about what our required reporting elements are to be sure that's clear to the public. Section 6 relates to Livable Communities Act reporting and clarifies and better organize the requirements around Section 473.25 for the Livable Communities Program. There's some new headings in there that help add clarity to the state law and help provide organizational clarity to that section, which was previously very long and hard to read. It also clarifies the annual report to the legislature being submitted by April 1st of each year. So that's in state law in this proposal. Sections 7, 8, and 9 relate to Livable Communities Act funding and participation, and really is streamlining those elements where each of those different funds within the Livable Communities Act program were repetitive, redundant, or slightly different from one another. So just clarifying that participation from any of the programs, the tax-based revitalization account, the livable communities demonstration account, the local housing incentives account, et cetera, that those have all of the same definitions, the same terminology, the same participation requirements, rather than being referential and repetitive amongst all of those four different funds within the program. So it looks like a lot, but really consolidates those requirements and simplifies the language in this area. Section 10 relates to our procedures for reviewing the operations and maintenance expenses from each of the 10 regional parks implementing agency partners within the metropolitan area. This relates to the funding that is distributed to the operations and maintenance funds. And in order to do so, the current statute requires agencies to submit their previous year's actual expenditures to the Metropolitan Council by July 1st. And then council staff are required to review all those submissions by July 15th each year and make initial payment distributions by August 1st. When the statute was originally written, our regional park system was considerably smaller back in the 70s. And since then, our program and our system has grown significantly, such that we're reviewing more than $100 million in annual expenses in a very short time frame. So this proposal would amend that process and clarify that reimbursements for operations and maintenance would be based on the most recent audited financial statements rather than the reported actual expenses. This would give council staff as well as implementing agencies more surety that they have the right numbers and the right things, and that we've had these reviewed with a little more time associated with them than the 2-week time frame that's prescribed in state law today. We have talked with agencies about this over the years, and this is something that has been supported by them as well. Section 15, finally, relates to the Metropolitan Ag Preserves Program and provides clarity about the order of operations for when local governments can initiate expiration out of that program for agricultural preserve statutes and properties that are enrolled in that program, and how it relates to steps they need to take to amend their comprehensive plan and when they submit that plan to the council for review. There were some changes a couple of years ago in this statute that added to some confusion. So over the years, as we've been working with cities, we've been looking to provide this clarity on what the order of operations is for the steps they need to take for this particular part of the program. And then finally, Section 16 is related to repealers in the Livable Communities Act section. As I had noted earlier, in reorganizing that content and simplifying that content, we're removing some of those areas where there's duplication or redundancy in language and making that all referential within itself. And so with that, thank you for your time. I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak on this bill? Seeing none, is there any member discussion? Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Vernig?
Yeah, I'd say anytime we can streamline administration, clarify language, improve reporting, reduce duplication and efforts, we should. So that's what this bill does. I'd just say thank you and renew my motion that House File 3882 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. With that, House File 3882 is laid over. I'm going to hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Lee, and if you could give me a second, I will move to the table. You can stay there. Probably easier. Or you can move, that's fine too. That makes sense, sir. That's a good call.
Would you like to move your bill, Chair?
Sure, I will move that House File 3883 be recommended for inclusion and laid over.
Okay, to your bill.
And I have an A1 author's amendment. I'd like to move that.
Okay, Chair Freiberg moves the A1. Would you like to describe the amendment?
Sure. The amendment would mirror other parts of the statute, and the proposed changes would clarify that this would not just apply to elected officials. There are both elected and non-elected officials who serve on the committee at issue here.
Okay. Is there discussion on the amendment? Okay. I guess should we take a vote on this?
Yeah.
So all in favor of the A1?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Any opposed? All right. The A1 is adopted. Let's see. House File 3883 we're considering House File 3883 as amended to your bill.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. So this proposal would update Minnesota statutes Section 473.1565 to make changes to appointments to the Metropolitan Area Water Supply Advisory Committee. Do you say MOSAC or?
We do.
Okay, they do say MOSAC, so you might hear that term, I suspect, in the discussion of this bill. The proposal would also update some parts of the law that are out of date. That's the very brief summary. With that, I'm happy to turn it over to the testifier.
Okay. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you so much, Chair Freiberg, for authoring this bill and for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Hannah Pallmeyer. I'm the Government Affairs Manager at the Metropolitan Council. And I'll just walk through very quickly House File 3883. As Chair Freiberg said, this is for our MOSAC, the Metropolitan Area Water Supply Advisory Committee, which is an advisory committee to the Metropolitan Council. The committee is made up of a variety of folks, and that membership is in state law. It includes people from a few state agencies. It includes public officials from both the 7-county metro area as well as 4 counties to the north of the metropolitan area. And it also includes a few other folks from Minneapolis and St. Paul water supply agencies. So we are looking to do a few things with this bill. One, as the chair said, we do just see that there's some outdated language in this bill that we're just looking to clean up, as well as adding some, you know, including but not limited to. So just making sure that the statute is reflective of what we do at MOSAC. And then we are also looking to change a little bit about how we do appointments to this, to the MOSAC. We would take the folks from the 4 counties outside of the metro area. Currently, they apply through the Secretary of State's office, and we would have those be a direct appointment to MOSAC from the county. We do have other folks on this committee who are also directly appointed, so that is something, we have kind of a mixture of people who are on this committee. We are also looking to add a tribal representative to this committee that would be appointed by the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, or MIAC. We've previously worked with MIAC on having someone appointed, a tribal representative appointed to our technical advisory committee to the MOSAC itself. And then we also included some language in here that would be about what would happen if someone were no longer eligible to serve on MOSAC. As I said, there's a variety of ways that you can get appointed to MOSAC. So if someone, for example, you know, worked at the Department of Natural Resources and then no longer works at the Department of Natural Resources, we would just clarify that they would no longer be eligible to serve on MOSAC, and then we would work with the DNR to appoint a replacement. So I think that's a high-level summary of what the changes in this bill are, and happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Pallmeyer. I was confused earlier because I also have a Sam Pask on the testifier list, so I don't know if he's here or if he was just here to answer questions.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Sam Paskey is here with me. He's just to answer any questions if people would like to talk more about what MOSAC is and how it works with the council.
Okay, thank you. Are there any members of the public present who would like to testify to this bill? Okay, so seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Chair Ecom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to make a comment as a former MOSAC member. And yes, they did say MOSAC back then, too. And really appreciate the great work that the committee does, and really gave me an opportunity as a local city council member at the time to learn about a lot about water issues that were happening in other parts of the metro area, not just in mine, and at the time was some of the water issues in at the ammunition site and some of the, so anyway, it was a really interesting and informative opportunity for me, and glad to see that it's continuing to give opportunities for other people. So just only a nice comment.
It looks like the chair wants to comment.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Ecom. I did actually think of you when they sent over the bills. However, I couldn't find you at the time, so I just wanted to get it on the agenda for today, so I just put my own name on it. But if you'd like to co-author it, I'd be honored to have you. Okay, thank you.
It sounds like another productive committee meeting. Any other members? Okay, final words, Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Vice Chair Lee. I think this is a common sense bill. I appreciate the committee's consideration, and I'd renew my motion to lay over House File 3883 as amended.
Okay. The chair renews his motion to lay over House File 3883 as amended. All right, so next on our agenda is another riveting Freiburg bill, House File 3363. This is probably the most riveting. 3363, right?
Yeah. No. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that.
Oh, okay. Pardon.
Oh, sorry.
So it is 3362.
No, actually, I think the agenda calls for 3363 next.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So before us, members, is House File 3363. Chair Freiburg, to your motion.
Yep, thank you. I will move House File 3363 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary Committee. There was one late-breaking amendment to this that Co-Chair Quam and I discussed earlier today that is being handed out right now. I think we'll probably take it up last so I can explain it at that point.
Okay.
But I did want to draw members' attention to it. It's also been posted on the committee website. That's the A14 amendment for those who are interested.
Okay.
So if you'd like, Madam Chair, I could describe the bill.
Yeah. Let's wait until they figure this out. Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Okay. So as a reminder, committee, we are on House File 3363. To the chair.
Yeah, so thank you, Madam Chair. I developed this bill in consultation with Campaign Finance Board Director Jeff Sigurdsson after the events of this past June. And I don't really want to revisit those events in committee. I'm not sure how well I'd keep it together if I did. I certainly don't want to platform a murderer, but suffice it to say that the public availability of the home addresses of many legislators put our safety at risk in the heightened political environment we find ourselves in. There are many locations where our private data might be available, and there are other bills that address some of those locations. But this bill addresses one location within the jurisdiction of this committee, the Campaign Finance Board, or the CFB. You might hear that abbreviation as part of this committee as well. Sort of as I understand it, and I know Director Sigurdsson is here as well, and he's available for questions if any come up. Immediately after the events of June 14th, the Campaign Finance Board pulled down candidate addresses from places like the committee registration page. But there were other spots within the Campaign Finance Board website where our information might still be available, and the Campaign Finance Board felt legislation would help address those locations as well as making their actions of June permanent. So that's what this bill does. The bill affects legislators directly, so I didn't request anybody to testify on this bill. I thought there might be a lot of committee discussions, so I thought it was important that we have plenty of time for that. I don't know if this might be an appropriate time for you to ask if there's any members of the public who wish to testify, but I don't have any testifiers prepared.
Okay, thank you. As is custom, are there members of the audience here who would like to testify on this bill? Okay, so seeing none, we're going to move to member discussion. There are a number of amendments
Yeah, it might make sense, Madam Vice Chair, to go through the amendments first, and it might be helpful if I just kind of provide a little background on why there's so many of them.
Sure.
So the Senate heard this bill last week, and they adopted an extensive delete everything amendment that made some changes to the language, and it also added in some new issues. I think there's merit to some of the changes they made, but I wasn't totally sure where the committee was with it, and it did expand the scope of the bill beyond kind of the initial intent of just addressing Campaign Finance Board website issues. So at the risk of making this more complicated, I asked staff to split up kind of some of the Senate amendments into several smaller amendments so that the committee could consider the issues individually. So the first nine amendments are those amendments. I don't know that I'd exactly call them author's amendments, but I did want to bring them forward for purposes of discussion. And if members have any questions, I can respond to those, or I could just move directly into the amendments if you wish. And then I will have time for discussion on the bill afterward, after the amendment discussion yep. has happened too.
So you want members to ask general questions now, and members will be able to ask individualized questions for each amendment as we consider them. Are there any general questions on this package of amendments? Okay. Well, let's move to Representative Coulter.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I was involved in another discussion. Is the idea, so are we taking these amendments for discussion individually, or was this the opportunity to discuss all of the amendments collectively?
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Coulter. My intention was to move the amendments individually okay. so that we could have discrete discussions on each topic.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
Yeah, my question was just whether there were general questions all about the amendments. But with that, and Representative Altendorf. Okay. So with that, we'll move to the A1.
Thank you. So I will move the A1 amendment. It might make sense. I know Mr. Gehring put in a lot of effort into these. It might make sense to have him sort of summarize the amendments, at least the first 9 amendments.
Okay. So Chair Freiberg has moved the A1 amendment, and the request is, Mr. Gehring, would you please explain the A1 for the members?
Sure. Madam Chair, the A1 amendment is a series of sections that largely, let's say, adds structural security devices and security services to the definition of non-campaign disbursement. And there are some conforming changes along with that addition throughout the amendment that have to do with definitions and how these kinds of expenses count towards contribution limits and other items. But the bulk of the amendment is about the new authority for campaigns to purchase those items. Compared to the Senate version, if you're keeping track with the Senate engrossment, I would just note one difference here, which is that in this version of the amendment, it excludes a requirement in the Senate version where the board would have to determine whether or not the addition of security devices would add to the value of property. This instead just requires the board determine that the devices are being purchased solely to provide security.
Thank you, Mr. Gehring. Is there a member discussion on the A1? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the author, Representative or Chair. On the second page of your amendment, 4.11 to 4.12, services obtained from a relative or business owned by a relative within the third degree of consanguinity of an official or candidate. Hey, was that a correct word, right? Yeah, that was good. Can you explain that particular line? Not the word, but the 4.11 to 4.12.
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you. I really appreciate the question, Chair McDonald. This brings me back to my law school days and taking property classes. The word consanguinity is one that came up in, I remember, one of the classes there. I might defer to nonpartisan staff to... I want to say the third degree of consanguinity, is that first cousin? Nobody closer than a first cousin, Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, Representative Freiberg, I believe that's correct. So it's effectively the third degree of family relationship. But yes. I would need to look it up to be sure.
Chair Freiberg.
Yeah, I would just like to reiterate also... Oh, this is dangerous, but this is Senate language. I could see the Senate being fans of words like consanguinity.
Further questions?
Oh, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, I wasn't finished. So, Chair
I was
Freiberg,
going back to you for clear. That's why. Yeah,
yeah no, yeah. That's all right. Actually, that word being defined, does this amendment prohibit then a member from using a second or third or even first cousin?
Thank you, Representative Chair McDonald. I might defer to, it is a modification of the definition of security services. This amendment adds security services to the list of items that can be used that are considered non-campaign expenditures, so they don't count against the limit, but So it doesn't prohibit it, but it does say if you can't declare it a campaign expense if you're paying for services provided by your brother, for example. Is that an accurate statement? Yeah, Mr. Gehring's nodding.
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, Representative Freiberg, that's correct. So this is an exclusion from the definition of security services. So if a, the way I read it, if a candidate purchased security services from a close relative within that third degree of relationship, then they wouldn't be eligible to report that as a non-campaign disbursement.
Representative McDonald.
So then my home, which is protected by Burn Security and is my studio and many other business and families in Wright County, Carver County, Scott, and many others, who is a relative of mine, I would this wouldn't apply. I would still be able to have my cousin, Burn Security, just a shout out to the business, utilize them to secure my home and business. I presume this would not apply in that scenario because I think it's Tom is a second cousin once removed.
Chair Freiberg.
These are important questions.
Okay. With the clarification that this is your second cousin once removed, Chair McDonald, I believe you could even declare this an expenditure because I don't think that is within the third degree of consanguinity. But, you know, even if it were, again, as I said, it wouldn't prohibit it. It would just limit your ability to declare it to be a non-campaign expenditure.
Representative McDonald.
Fascinating. I'm not sure I can support this amendment.
Okay, further discussion on the A1. Okay, Chair Freiberg, any last words?
No.
Okay, so the A1 is before the committee. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Aye. Well, the ayes have it. The A1 is adopted. Okay, so we're moving on to the A2. Chair Freiberg.
Thank you. The A2 deals with data classification of street addresses on reports and statements filed with the Campaign Finance Board. I don't know if Mr. Gehring has any clarification beyond that.
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, committee members, I don't have any particular clarification. I think it's accurate. This is providing for classification of reports that are going to the Campaign Finance Board. One distinction between the Senate version and the House and this proposal is that the Senate version has a more narrow approach to the types of reports that would be covered. The House version of the bill with this amendment would cover all types of reports and statements filed with the board.
Is there member discussion on this amendment? Chair Freiberg, any other thoughts?
Nope. It seems logical to me, so I encourage members to support it.
Okay. All in favor of A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the A2 is adopted. Okay, so before us, we have the A3 amendment. Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the A3 amendment. So this amendment would remove public official addresses from lobbyist gift reports, and if there's any additional clarification, Mr. Gehring could provide it.
Okay. Is there member discussion on the A3? Or I guess, Chair Freiberg, would you like Mr. Gehring to give a summary of the A3?
Do you think, he's kind of shaking his head. I'm gathering maybe my summary was sufficient.
Okay, I agree as well. So all in favor of the A3?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the A3 is adopted. Before us, Chair Freiberg moves the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move the A4. This relates to addresses related to expenditures reported on campaign reports. It does not change address reporting for contributors to campaigns. And I know there is a GOP amendment to this one as well. So maybe if, I don't know, Mr. Gehring could indicate if he thinks I should provide, or if he can provide more of a summary of the amendment than that, and then we could move to the GOP amendment.
Yeah, let's have Mr. Gehring provide a summary, please. Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, yes. So this is an amendment that has to do with the campaign reports that are filed by principal campaign committees and other types of committees. Under current law, the requirement is that the report disclose names, exact addresses, and other information about both contributors and vendors or other places to which contributions are either sent out from the campaign or are expended from the campaign. This would instead for the money that's going out of the campaign to another source, either contributing to another campaign committee or expending it for another purpose. The report would eliminate the requirement that the specific address be listed, and said would require just that the city, state, and zip code of the recipients be listed. But as Representative Freiberg indicated, there's no change to the requirement that an address be listed for contributors to the campaign.
Okay, so who is offering the A12? Oh, okay. Chair Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would move that A12 be the amended to the A4. And basically, this includes and protects BPOUs and political committees by, instead of address, having it city, state, and zip code.
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Co-Chair Quam, for bringing this forward. I think this makes sense. It would treat political committees, political funds, and party units consistent with the way candidates are treated. So I would encourage members to support it.
Okay, so to the A12, is there further discussion? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, so the A12 is adopted, amending the A4. We are back to the A4 as amended. Further discussion on the A4 as amended. Okay, so all in favor of the A4 as amended?
Aye.
Say aye. Any opposed? Okay, the A4 as amended has been adopted. Chair Freiberg moves the A5.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A5 deals with candidate addresses on affidavits of candidacy. Would welcome any additional information if Mr. Gehring has any to provide.
Mr. Gehring, any further summaries?
Sure, Madam Chair, so under current law, candidates are allowed to request that their address be protected if they certify that they have a concern for their safety or there's an order for protection issued. This would just allow any candidate to request that their address be classified as private.
Is there member discussion on the A5? Okay. Any last words, Chair Freiberg?
I would encourage members' support.
All right. All in favor of the A5, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the A5 has been adopted. Chair Freiberg moves the A6.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A6 deals with addresses on nominating petitions, which is another new area for this bill. So, and I'd welcome any comments Mr. Gehring has to offer.
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair and members, the A6 has to do with nominating petitions, as Chair Freiberg said. Nominating petitions are an alternate way of a candidate filing for office for candidates who aren't filing an affidavit of candidacy or were representing a specific political party. This just eliminates the requirement that they include their address on their petition.
Okay. Is there member discussion on the A6? Any last words?
I'd encourage members' support.
All right. All in favor of the A6, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. The A6 is adopted. Chair Freiberg moves the A7.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A7 deals with data classification of street addresses on local government candidate reports and statements. So these are statements filed with local officials and not with the Campaign Finance Board. And I'd welcome any additional clarification Mr. Gehring has to offer.
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, I don't have anything to add beyond that. This is Chapter 211A, which is the local government campaign reporting chapter.
Okay. All in favor of the A7, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the A7 is adopted. Chair Freiberg moves the A8.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A8 deals with retroactive redaction of existing reports filed by local government candidates. And again, I'd welcome any additional clarification Mr. Gehring might have to offer.
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, so this A8 provides a window of time during which local governments would be required to redact and remove reports that are existing on websites that have candidate addresses. Again, this applies only to local government candidates and the local officials who receive these reports. And that's it.
Is there member discussion on the A8? Okay. Chair Freiberg, any last words?
Encourage members to support it.
All in favor of the A8, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The A8 is adopted. Chair Freiberg moves the A9 in front of the committee.
Thank you. This one deals with, the A9 deals with retroactive redaction of existing reports filed with the Campaign Finance Board rather than local government candidates, and I'd welcome any clarification from Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Gehring?
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is the same, largely the same as the previous amendment in terms of its intent. It's a little more structured, and it gives the Campaign Finance Board a priority order for doing this work because there's a number of different types of reports and statements that they receive. And so this amendment would specify that order for redaction.
Thank you. Is there member discussion on the A9? Chair Freiberg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd encourage members' support.
Okay. All in favor of the A9, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the A9 is adopted. Chair Freiberg?
Yeah, numerically, the next amendment would be the A11, but with Co-Chair Quam's agreement, I think we can set that one aside for the moment because I think it's going to be superseded by the A14. I see Co-Chair Quam nodding, so I think the next one you might want to ask for is the A13.
Okay. Chair Freiberg moves the A13.
Oh, actually, I think it. How about Co-Chair Quam move this one?
Okay. Chair Quam moves A13 in front of the committee. Chair Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it basically takes care of a division making the IE disclosure a misdemeanor. In other words, it removes creating a criminal offense in this bill so that it wouldn't be going to those other committees. It still prohibits stuff, but we're not creating a misdemeanor.
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for bringing this forward, Co-Chair Quam. It is on a somewhat, I do think the change that this is deleting is a good change from a policy perspective, just to be clear. But it is on a slightly different topic, first of all, than the bill is intending to get at. So, and then Co-Chair Quam ably pointed out that because it has this criminal penalty in it, it would also likely need to go to the Public Safety Committee. So I'm in support of this, just to kind of streamline the intent, what the bill is working on. And then also, I do know there is likely language coming forward that deals with disclaimers on outdoor advertising that the Campaign Finance Board is going to be bringing. So since that's on that topic, I think when that comes forward, either as a bill or an amendment, that would probably be the more appropriate time to discuss the language that this amendment is deleting. So I'm in support of this amendment.
Thank you for the context, Chair Freiberg. Is there further member discussion on the A13? Okay. So all in favor of the A13, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the A13 has been adopted. Chair Freiberg moves the A14.
Co-Chair Quam move this
one. Okay. Chair Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to move the amendment A14 for inclusion. Basically, it is a clarification that allows for the heads of the caucus and both chambers to have access to the actual address, and they would not be publicly, they'd be prohibited from passing that else around, but allowing those officials within our chambers the knowledge of the actual addresses. I'm not sure if the author wants me to go in more detail of the possible reasons why that's something to do, but we felt that having that leadership have fuller knowledge was appropriate.
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Co-Chair Quam, for bringing this forward, and I do appreciate, I guess I should mention too, this is fairly late developing, so I'm open to waiving the amendment deadline on this so that this can be considered, because we do have a 24-hour deadline on this. So with Co-Chair Quam's agreement to doing that. And I do think this language is tightened up compared to the language of the A11. The A11 was, the A11 potentially referred to candidates and contributors, whereas this only deals with candidates. And it also places limits on the ability of caucus leaders to share the data. I'm not totally sure this language is necessary, but generally speaking, I do think this language is better than it is, just seeing as I have a whole host of reasons I prepared here to talk about this, but just seeing as you kind of kept your remarks fairly brief there, I won't go into those, but I would I would like to continue working with you on this language, potentially modifying it at the next stop. Maybe I'll just get the fact that I do have some potential concerns with the language, but I think just owing that you we negotiate in good faith on it, it is tighter than it had been in the A11. I'm willing to accept this, put it on, and have it, and then potentially in the Judiciary Committee, if we find additional tweaks to the language, I think we can continue to work on it and potentially adopt some changes there.
Chair Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the bipartisan efforts that are probably pretty evident in this committee, because we haven't been going through the first through third degree back and forth. It's been fairly cooperative in our discussions. So I am fully available so that we can fine-tune the language.
Thank you.
All right. Any last words on the A14? Sorry. I had a list for member discussion in general, not on this. Apologies. So, but Chair Akam.
Thank you. I just have a clarifying question about the amendment. And so would each of the four leaders have access to addresses for all of the caucus candidates?
Chair Quam.
Madam Chair, the intent is that the caucus leader would have the information for their people. I think we can get into the fine-tuning of the specific language, but the intent is to have this starting point moving with that, and I understand where you're going with this.
Chair Akam.
And so the intent is that, for example, the DFL House Caucus would just have the DFL candidate names, or would it be that caucus leader would have all of them?
Chair Quam.
The Senate would not have the House, and the House would not have the Senate, and there will be clarifying language of beyond that. Thank you.
Rep Greenman. Apologies, Rep Greenman. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is actually just to stand up on clarification, and it might be a question for Mr. Gearing, but since there are candidates that are not just legislative candidates covered by 10A, with this amendment, how does it treat candidates who, for some other office that is not covered by either of the caucuses?
Mr. Gearing.
Madam Chair, Representative Greenman, as drafted here, this would provide access to all candidate filings. It's not specific to legislative offices, but as Chair Quam said, the intent may be different than that and might need some tweaks going forward.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the work that's being done. I think just making sure when we say candidates, we oftentimes put ourselves at the center of the conversation, but there's lots of candidates. So just making sure we're accomplishing the intent and thinking about all the other candidates that have to file that have nothing to do with our caucuses. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. So the intent of the bill, or the intent of the amendment, rather, is that, again, just to sort of get specific about it, the DFL caucus leader in the House would have access to addresses for every candidate running for the Minnesota House. And the Republican leader in the House would have access to the address for every candidate running for the Minnesota House. Am I understanding that correctly?
Chair Quam.
The intent is that the leadership in the House would be aware of the addresses for the members of the House, and there are several different reasons why that might be, especially, you know, considering, you know, the multitude of different things going on. But we just, the feeling is that we should have leadership available to be able to have and review information, because we don't necessarily know every possible reason, but leadership has earned the right to a lot of accessibility that members and the public do not have, and this would be maintaining that accessibility for the leadership in each chamber.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to make sure I understood what the bill is. I don't read it that way, but I will put my trust in the chairs of this committee that it will get to what I think you are trying to get to. So I wanted to make sure I understood it. Thank you.
Right. Representative Davis.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Freiberg. I'm just trying to get an issue that happened in the 2024 election in District 40B, where we had a candidate supposedly not or allegedly not living in the district, and his opponent was able to investigate that and find it out. So I think my question is to Mr. Gehring, perhaps. This amendment or this bill as amended, if we adopt this amendment, and if this bill is signed in the language, would that have prevented that from happening, an opponent investigating on whether or not his opponent lived in the district?
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, nothing in this amendment would change the ability of an opponent to file a complaint that someone doesn't live in the district, and that's sort of a separate process determining residence that would be a court proceeding. This would be a potential data point that someone might use to determine whether someone is outside of their district or not, but that's that determination really is a separate process from what this amendment is.
Representative Davis.
So, Mr. Chair, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
Chair Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The intent is to prevent the leadership in the chamber from being surprised. That would be one effect of the intent.
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Quam, Representative Davis. Yes, this has been, during my time in the legislature, there have been two individuals elected to the position of state representative from either party who ran into some issues in this area. And, you know, I didn't want to get into my issues with this amendment, you know, that's why I would appreciate the statement, Chair Quam, that you would continue to working on this. You know, I'm not totally convinced this would have prevented what happened there. It does still depend on, you know, I know in both cases there were, you know, efforts to by individuals to, you know, stake out the house or the apartment, you know, the house in the case that happened longer ago, the apartment in the case that happened more recently. I don't know that that's a great system. I do think there are other ways that this could be verified. I'm not sure party leaders are necessarily the best case. I mean, in some ways it seems like it's more practical to address this concern at the kind of verification of candidacy stage rather than sharing candidate addresses with caucus leaders. We did in fact pass a law in 2024 that could have addressed the residency issue and that came up in the 2024 election. Unfortunately, that law didn't take effect until after the filing deadline, so it didn't apply in that case. But the candidate would have had to change his address on his license or set up to pay bills at the new address. So there are actually provisions in law that we haven't used yet, but I think will take effect this session. Regardless of all that, I certainly think if there are ways we can prevent this from happening, I would like to keep working with Chair Quam just to make sure that the language that we have is the most effective way of doing that. I think having this in there does kind of like flag this as an issue that we can continue to work on. And so I look forward to continuing to do so.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, is there further discussion on the A14? Okay, so all in favor of A14, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Right, the A14 is adopted. Okay, so the A11 is not going to be offered. So according to my list, I think we've considered all of the amendments that we had prepared. And now we're going to move to the member discussion portion of the bill as amended. So Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm be glad to hear from other members first, and then I can close.
I just know you wanted to get the bill in the shape that you wanted it, so yeah.
I appreciate members' indulgence here. I don't know, I don't know if that was the best situation, but this is how the sausage gets made.
That's right. So, any further discussion on the bill as amended, Representative Davis?
Forgive me for not paying attention earlier, Madam Chair. What are we doing with this bill?
Yes, the motion is to move the bill as amended to the Judiciary Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further, Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Chair. Chair Freiberg, once it gets into the Judiciary, is your intention to have this go to the General Register or a larger bill within the Judiciary?
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative McDonald. It's not totally up to me. I suspect the co-chairs of the Judiciary Committee will have thoughts about where the bill should go. I mean, certainly anything we can do to get, I do think this addresses an important issue. Certainly anything we can do to get this done quickly, it would be fine by me. But I understand if there are, if the co-chairs of the Judiciary Committee have some plan as well. So I guess, I don't know. Chair McDonald, I spent so much time trying to figure out all these amendments last night. I didn't even think that far ahead. I just kind of wanted to get today over with.
I think there's also discussion of, possibly also public safety, maybe, right? Chair Freiberg?
Because we adopted the QAM amendment, that should not be necessary.
All right, very good. Representative McDonald. Okay. further discussion on House File 3663 as amended. Closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, for working through this. I do think there were some good suggestions that came out of the Senate, so I wanted to give those kind of due consideration as part of this. I certainly, after the events of the summer, I certainly think our, address privacy is important, but this, the Senate amendments kind of broadened it beyond that as well to include people like donors and candidates. So, I think this addresses an important issue of safety of both us and the public. So I'm glad to keep this moving. I appreciate members' robust discussion on the amendments in the bill and would welcome your support to move it to the Judiciary Committee. And with that, I guess I will renew my motion that House File 3363, as amended, be re-referred to the Judiciary Committee.
Chair Freiberg renews his motion to re-refer House File 3363 as amended to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Say nay. The motion prevails and the bill is on its way to Judiciary. Thank you, members. Okay, so we have one last Freiberg bill on the agenda. Chair Freiberg moves.
Reflect that Representative Greenman let out a note of disgust.
Noted. Chair Freiberg moves House File 3362 before the committee.
So thank you. I will move that House File 3362 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it seems like something involving this statute comes up every year after some issue develops while somebody is attempting to knock on doors in apartment buildings. This was brought to me by a senator who was attempting to knock on doors to invite people to her official town meeting. Her entry was denied because she wasn't knocking on doors in her capacity as a candidate, but in her capacity as an incumbent legislator. So the bill just adds the phrase elected official to the statute next to references to the word candidate. It seems consistent with the purpose of the door knocking statute, so I thought it merited a committee discussion. I did not invite anybody to testify. Again, this is an issue I think that affects us, and so, but I do know somebody signed up to testify. So welcome any public testimony, and I know there are a couple of amendments as well.
Okay. Yeah, so on the agenda, I have Cecil Smith signed up to testify. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Madam Chair, Chairs Freiberg and Quam, and members, my name is Cecil Smith. I represent the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. MHA has more than 2,200 members who provide housing to over 600,000 Minnesotans and approximately 300,000 rental homes across the state. MHA respectfully opposes House File 3362. This bill raises serious tenant privacy and safety concerns. A multifamily building is not a public venue. It is a collection of private homes. Residents who choose apartment living retain the same or greater expectation of privacy than those in single-family homes. In fact, many rely heavily on secured entrances, controlled access systems, and established procedures to ensure that only residents and authorized guests enter the property. Expanding statutory access for elected officials beyond just campaign season risks weakening those protections and undermining residents' sense of security and privacy in their own homes. We remain supportive of orderly and reasonable campaign season access. The proposal also introduces genuine security challenges. Secure access buildings are intentionally designed to restrict entry to known and authorized individuals, creating additional statutory entry rights for individuals who are not tenants, employees, inspectors, or emergency responders complicates those protocols and introduces the risk of confusion, inconsistency, or misuse. Without clear guardrails, staff are placed in difficult positions and residents may be exposed to unnecessary risk. There are operational implications as well. Most multifamily properties do not have continuous on-site staffing. Coordinating access requests, particularly in large rental communities, requires time, supervision, and logistical adjustments. This can interrupt maintenance operations and resident services and can add administrative burden, ultimately affecting the cost and management of housing. Finally, the U.S. Supreme Court has set limitations based on the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution on government imposing access to private property, most recently in the Cedar Point nursery case. For those reasons, we respectfully urge a no vote. Thank you.
Are there members of the audience who would like to testify on this bill? Okay, so seeing none, we will move to the member discussion portion of this presentation and, yes, there are amendments. I mean, we'll do the amendments. And then, yeah, I just consider that part of member discussion, but I won't forget you, Altendorf.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Freiberg. The First Amendment that I'm offering on this bill is very simple. For the definition of government official, you excluded president and vice president. Probably pretty unlikely that they would be included, but let's go ahead and have this amendment remove it and not exclude them.
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair Altendorf. Yeah, that exception was included in the Senate language. I'm not 100% sure why, but I say if the, setting aside anybody's feelings on the current holders of the offices of president and vice president, if some generic president or vice president wants to door knock in an apartment in Minnesota, I guess that would be pretty exciting, I would think. So I don't know that everybody would be crazy about it, but I guess they are an elected official the same way a city council member or member of the legislature is. So I would be inclined to support this.
Chair Freiberg, or Chair Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we actually have had a person from Minnesota serve in one of those two offices. So, and I would not have had problems with that person knocking on my door. So, thank you.
Representative Altendorf. Okay. So we are voting on the A1. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the A1 is adopted. Representative Altendorf offers A2.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Freiberg again. So this one, I find it to be problematic that the bill as written is referencing staff, as government officials would not necessarily be paid to work in this capacity. And I feel like we're moving over to a line that we probably should not be. And so this amendment A2 is just removing staff.
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Altendorf. We do allow campaign volunteers under current law. I guess, you know, without knowing exactly what's in a staff member's responsibilities, I don't know whether or not this would be considered part of their job. I don't think I would ask my staff to do this, but you know, in the interest of going along, I don't see a huge problem. I don't see this situation occurring that much. And the bill is being laid over, and if there are issues, we can certainly work them out subsequently too. So I'm fine accepting this amendment as well.
Okay. Is there further discussion on the A2? All right. All in favor of the A2, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The A2 is adopted. Okay. So I have no more amendments submitted for consideration. So now we will move to the member discussion portion. Chair Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is laid over so that we don't, you know, we could possibly in the future add exempting Secret Service and other ones that come to mind that might overlap on that definition. But thank you for bringing this bill forward. And the only thing I would look at is possibly having a season for this happening, you know, as opposed to, you know, 365. Sure. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, I got a question for the testifier, the gentleman who had, was it a Wales accent or Australian? We were New Zealand.
I knew you'd ask.
That was my third guess.
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair. Mr. Smith, in your testimony, you said you wouldn't want to put the residents to unnecessary risks. Are you suggesting that a candidate or an elected official, such as the one sitting here and the one next to you to your right, are a risk to the public?
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I understood in my testimony that we were talking about you as we testify today. Our general concern is we have residents who do not feel comfortable when there are unfamiliar people. And hopefully, all of you are very, very familiar to your constituents, and so that would never be a problem. But unfortunately, the reality is what it is, and people do not know who their elected officials are generally, and it is their sense of privacy and security and well-being, especially in buildings that promote themselves as being secure facilities, is our primary concern.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, thank you for that. Certainly this is an opportunity then for residents, and we certainly understand the risks or the concern, but this is a beautiful opportunity and pertinent that they get to know their elected officials. So with that said, in comment to your comment, you probably would agree that this is a good thing that they get to know their elected officials.
Mr. Smith.
Madam
you don't
Chair.
Have to respond if you don't want to. But.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I wish every Minnesotan understood who their elected officials were.
Amen.
Thank you. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Freiberg. Despite my audible sigh, it was not about this bill. I think this is actually a very good bill. And just getting to the point I think Representative McDonald is making, I think that we actually should and should have every opportunity to do more as elected officials to engage our voters and to engage our communities. And I think this is one way to do it. I always feel uncomfortable when I hear management companies sort of trying to limit access based on protecting security concerns that are not, we're not actually hearing from the constituents, we're hearing it from the companies. And the companies are actually not the ones who get to decide what our voters and our relationships should be with them. It should be our voters. And I think that there's lots of opportunities to ensure. I know that when I've gone door knocking before, sometimes they've put up a flyer and sent out an email. There's lots of things to do. Usually, I think what we hear is this is just too much of a pain of administration. That's not a good enough reason to get in the way of voters having access to their elected officials. And so I think that this is a really good opportunity to do what we know how to do on with candidates. And frankly, I think people would probably be more comfortable feeling seeing somebody with an election certificate. And I would guess that if you ask most voters, they would say we see our elected officials too little, not too much. So thank you for this bill, and I'm looking forward to supporting it.
Representative Coulter. Nope. Okay. Any further discussion? Chair Freiberg, closing remarks.
Yep. Thank you. I think this is fairly common sense. I'm not sure functionally I see a distinction between allowing candidates as candidates and allowing elected officials as elected officials to door knock. I don't really think it one group implicates safety and the other doesn't. So I think this is a common sense change. I appreciate the supportive comments I heard from members. Just a reminder too, this is being laid over. So we can still work on language to the extent there's a need to do so. So I guess with that, I would renew my motion that House File 3362 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion.
Chair Freiberg renews his motion to lay over House File 3362 as amended. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Actually, yeah.
Oh, we're laying over. Sorry. Great. The work is done. Okay, so House File 3362 is, as amended, is laid over. And with that, I don't know, Chair Quam, if you want to give a preview for our next meeting? Nope. Okay, Chair Freiberg? Nope. Okay. All right. This meeting is adjourned. Thanks.